CEU Medieval Radio, Past Perfect, the talk show about medieval and early modern culture.
Hello and welcome to Past Perfect, CEU's Medieval Radio's podcast about everything medieval and early modern. My name is Karst Schuil and I'm joined here today by Juan Manuel Rubio Arevalo. He is a PhD candidate at the Department of Medieval Studies of the CEU. Juan obtained a master's degree in history from the Universidad de los Andes in Colombia and a Master of Arts in Medieval Studies at the CEU. His research interests include history of the Crusades, church history, and biblical exegesis. Today, however, he's joined us to talk about medievalisms, video games, and education, that all come together in his PhD project Deus Ludit, Crusader Medievalisms, Procedural Rhetorics, and the Approach of Contentious Past in Video Games. Welcome, Juan.
Thank you very much for your invitation. I'm always very happy to talk about video games because, I mean, I'm a massive nerd and I love video games, so yeah.
Thank you. Actually, I thought was maybe first interesting to hear a little bit more about this PhD project, also what inspired you to do this. They are not the common topics in the medieval studies department.
Right, so a big part of the inspiration for the project comes from my own personal experience. I've been playing video games since I was very little. My very first approaches to history was through video games. I always tell everyone, half joke, half truth, that one of the reasons why I'm a historian is because I used to play too much of Age of Empires when I was little. My mom always said that it was never going to take me anywhere, but now I'm here, so the joke's on her, I guess. And of course, like, part of the problem is that because I had a very bad history teacher when I was in high school, my first like historical knowledge was through video games. And then when I got to the university, oh, surprise, a lot of the things that I had thought that I had learned were actually wrong. But they were very convincing within the environment of the game. And part of the inspiration comes precisely from that. From not only trying to see how video games remediate history, but also thinking about how can we actually use them to convey history in a more meaningful way. Precisely part of the problem is that we as scholars, I think we are very much aware that we are never going to have the reach of a mass medium, right? Be it a film or be it a video game. And I think that we should be able to use this type of tools that we have available to us to approach as much people as we can with meaningful approaches to history. That's the basic inspiration where the project comes from.
And could you just say in like two sentences or three, really concrete, what do you do?
So what the research does basically is to see how a set of video games remediate the Crusades. The reason why I focus on the Crusades is because I call it a mid-polemical historical topic, meaning that it's very contentious nowadays because of the way in which crusading medievalisms are used in political discourse. Far-right movements love the Crusades to talk about immigration or to talk about multiculturalism. This also applies to the case of Islamist groups who also love crusading medievalisms. But they are not as polemical that you cannot play at them. So you can play to be a crusader in a way that, for example, you cannot play with the Holocaust or you cannot play with slavery. So part of the problem is precisely that. Let's try to see what these games do when they take the Crusades and they simulate them. What do they ask the player to do? And on the other hand, also a concern on how can we use them as pedagogical tools. And for this, I carry out a series of workshops with general audiences. It's really open to anyone who is not a historian of the Crusades, who likes video games, and I give them some material, they play the game, and then we have an interview, and it is to try to combine these two elements. So my own analysis and my own theoretical approach to the games, and also what is a non-specialized audience seeing in this game, and what are they trying to, what do they get out of it? That's basically what I do.
Okay, interesting, interesting. And I was reading up on your research, on your profile, and you mentioned there a ludo narrative, and I was quite fascinated because ludo reminds me of Johan Huizinga's Homo Ludens. So I was wondering, how did you come to the approach? What is it? And what are the inspirations behind it?
Right. So, of course, Huizinga's text is like the foundational text whenever we talk about game studies, right? His book is from 1939, if I remember correctly. And his whole point is how playing is a ritual cultural experience, right? It's not just the play for playing sake, because babies play, animals play, but that's not the same as a football match, right? And he recognizes a series of categories when we think about playing. We do it for fun. It's a disinterested activity. It's an activity that you engage with freely. It's a limited activity in a space and a time. And more importantly, it's modeled by rules. And that is precisely what I try to focus on the research and where the element of ludonarrative comes into. Because video games, when you think about it, they do not offer you just a simple narrative of the past. A simple narrative of the past, you can get it in a book, you can get it in a movie. But when you're playing in the game, you are part of the narrative that is taking part of the screen. You're actively acting upon the events, potentially changing history depending on what the game allows you to do or not. And ludonarrative is precisely that. The interaction between the action of playing and the narrative that the game is giving you, and how does that combine to give you a historical argument.
Is that also where this difference between learning from a book and learning from a video game or are there more differences?
That's what I would say is like the essential difference and where the essential approach comes into, right? Because part of the issue, for example, working with this type of medium, although game studies is like a very fast-growing area of research in the last couple of years with the growth of the video game industry, which is massive, it makes a lot of money. It's also the idea that video games still within some academic circles is, oh, it's just inaccuracies, it's just pastime, and that's it. But I think that's where precisely the mistake lays, right? Because when you think about, for example, accuracy in a game, of course, it can be of whether the events are right or wrong. But a game is not about whether the events are right or wrong, because it might get the events wrong, but a game is not trying to be accurate. It's a game. It's trying to be fun. It's more about what the game is asking you to do. And through the action of acting and playing and engaging with a set of rules and the thought process that goes in your head, that's like the key difference on how you, for example, approach history in a book and how you approach it in a game. To give you a concrete example, right? I don't know if any of you here has played Crusader Kings. Well, I hope that the audience, some of them might be really familiarized with Crusader Kings. It's a very complex strategy game, which is basically about feudalism. So the idea is that you embody a feudal ruler. This can be a count, a king, an emperor. And you interact with other feudal lords, and you try to expand your kingdom and keep your family and such. But the decisions that it asks you to make are related to how this system would work. So, for example, if you have a noble, a vassal of yours who is a rebel, who doesn't like you, you cannot simply go and arrest him, because that is going to piss off your other nobles, because they don't want to be arrested if they don't like you. But then you have to think about how would you deal with this rebellious noble. Maybe you want him to rebel, and then you can quash him, and then you have an excuse. But if he rebels and he has too much support, then that is dangerous. So when you're thinking about these different decisions that the game is asking you to engage with, that's a different form of historical engagement and experience. The result can be different. It can be non-historical in terms of, I don't know, you can be England that you conquer the south of Italy. But that's not the point.
Interesting. You said a couple of things I would like to elaborate a little bit on. But the first, what I was thinking about when you spoke about it is not about accuracy. Is there a role for a historian in this process at all then? If it is more about the engagement, could an historian bring accuracy to it? Or is that maybe too difficult because of the complexity of the past?
The thing there is that it depends on the type of game that you're talking about, right? Normally, these games that is built into their design of we want to be as accurate as we can within the framework of the game, they tend to work with historians. And this is very much known. Assassin's Creed is the best example, right? Since the very first Assassin's Creed in 2006, they have been working with historians, with historical maps, with historical sources to recreate the whole thing. But then the issue is, okay, what is the game actually trying to do? Because if you take a game like Assassin's Creed, which is about like the detailed reconstruction of the past, I don't know, you're walking around Venice, and it actually kind of looks like Venice, and people are dressed like in the 15th century, there's a different type of historical accuracy. I mean, the narrative is about ancient civilization, kind of thing that we know is not historical, but in that case, that's not really what the historian is there to do. What the historian is there to do is to help get the information around the reconstruction of the space, right? The daily practice of the space, right? Of this space, also to get them right, and maybe some basic narrative elements that then the designer plays with. When you think about a game, for example, like Crusader Kings, the role of the historian is different, because there the role of the historian is less about the environment itself, which of course, I mean, they still can normally give advice on how it should look, how armor worked through, again, but it's more about how do we design gameplay mechanics that reflect the historical knowledge that we want to talk about. And it's actually also very interesting, because I've known of cases of historians, people who graduated with history degrees, who end up being hired by game development studios to develop games. So there is definitely a role there. Of course, what we have to keep in mind is that judging a game just by its accuracy in terms of it got this right and this wrong and this right and this wrong, that's rather boring and dull. It doesn't say much. It's really about how the game constructs a narrative of the past using the elements of the game.
Yes, and another thing you said was this learning by engagement, maybe you could say. I was wondering, how do you assess this impact of the video game on historical education? Because I had a really good historical teacher, and I was fascinated by his stories and the books we read with him, and I learned a lot from that, although I also played Assassin's Creed, for example. So do you have numbers on this, or is there a lot of research to be done in this area, maybe? Because, it is quite an important thing to know. If this, for example, would be a really big impact.
That's an interesting question, right? Because I think it depends. So to give you an example, the American Historical Association, they carried out a general survey in 2021. And in this public survey that they made, it's about public history, how people understand history and how they engage with history. When they were asked where these audiences got their historical information, none of the top five sources were as academic. Now, video games were not there. Video games were actually rather down below, around only 11%, which is a very small percentage of the people who actually say, I go to video games to learn history. Now, the thing is that just because somebody is playing a historical video game, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are not playing, just that they are not thinking in terms of, that they are not learning, that they are not thinking in terms of learning just because they are playing it. Although, at least in the research that I've been doing, video games definitely serve at least as a very good gateway into later knowledge. Like most of the people that I have already done this workshop with, they do manifest that the video game at least raised their curiosity to go and look for more information. And they're still, like, if you ask them about some of the contents of knowledge, they can say some things back to you, definitely. However, and this is like the thing that is really important in all of this, is about, I mean, when you play a game, it's about fun. And then it's about what is the type of information or notion of history that you're getting in the background as you're playing a video game. An example that I really like is Call of Duty. When you play a Call of Duty game, it tells you this very idea of World War II, as it happened, quote unquote, because the buildings look like that and the guns look like that and the uniforms could look like that. But when you actually think about the narrative or the framework, it's a very distorted version of World War II because you're never faced with the horrors of World War II, which begs the question, can you actually have this type of experience? And from that perspective, then the question would be, a player might not be thinking that they are learning about World War II in their head, but they are absorbing a version of the narrative definitely through that. In that sense, video games are not very different from traditional historiography. They just take the past, choose some things, and create a narrative around it. And then the question would be, what is a person getting out of it? They definitely get something out of it. What they get depends on the type of game and also what is the type of engagement that they are looking into it.
Okay, that's an interesting thing you say. But I was thinking about when you talked about like this narrative and in books and in movies, there is a review of it that also outlines this narrative or says, okay, this is from this certain perspective. Mm-hmm. Should we also do this for video games in this way?
I do think so. And I do think so. On the one hand, because when we think about reviews for video games, they're often mostly done by video game journalists focusing on the gaming side, which is fine, right? And again, then they are video games, and they are about being fun. But when it comes about actually the type of narrative that it is giving you, I do think it's necessary. And the example that comes to mind is one of the games that I'm working with that is called Ancestors Legacy. It is a 2018 video game developed by a Polish studio called Destructive Creations. Now, this is a studio that has some problematic history in association with far-right movements in Poland. And some of these ideas kind of seed into some of their games. When I was playing Ancestors Legacy, and when I finished the two game campaigns that were about the Crusades, or at least when I finished the first one, the Teutonic Knights one, it seemed like, in general, like pretty okay to me. Like, there was not necessarily something that caught my attention right away, because the game is accurate in the chronological sense. So the events follow chronologically as they should, with, of course, minor details for narrative purposes, but that's to be expected on the game, whatever. But then when I played the Saladin campaign, that one was much more interesting, because there you start seeing the framing of the narrative. And that this is something that, going back, for example, what I'm doing in my research, most of the people that I have finished this workshop with, they define history in its eventfulness and not in its narrative. So history not as narratives that we create about the past through the sources that are available to us, but history as events, as names, as dates, as people. And when you're approaching video games with this conception of history, it's very easy to miss the actual framework of the narrative, which tends to be the problematic element. So, for example, in the case of the Saladin campaign, okay, yes, the facts are accurate as much as they can be within the video game. They are sequentially make sense and such. But the whole framing of the narrative, when you know the story of the story, and when you pay attention to the language that it uses, to the images that the game is showing you, to the options that the game allows you to do and what it doesn't allow you to do, it really frames the whole crusading issue in this very clash of civilizations narrative, right? Like, the Crusades were this unavoidable part of the clash between Christianity and Islam that is kind of unavoidable, and such, just as it happened then, it is doomed to continue, I don't know, maybe until the end of times. But like, this association of the war on terror, the migrant crisis with the Crusades, because they're all like clash of civilization stuff. In that sense is where I believe that academic reviews of these games are actually a very useful tool, not only to point out to other scholars like, hey, this game does this, we can use it in this way academically or pedagogically, but also to point out where are like those problematic narratives that video games tend to use very recurrently, which of course like makes sense, they want to sell, right? And it's easier to sell if you use what you assume the audience is going to know.
Yes, thank you. I think and something for the future maybe to set up. I would like to return a little bit to your project, because what I found also interesting reading through the material a little bit is that you actually don't have a totally historical research. It isn't quite a sociological, maybe anthropological, pedagogical element. And I was just wondering, how did you work this into the methodology? How did you bring this together? It seems like
That was a challenge, because I am not a sociologist. I am not an anthropologist. I studied political science, but of course I'm not using political science to this. I'm a historian. Like, in most of my education is historical, so I'm used with it dealing with sources, right? In that sense, dealing with the video games themselves is not too different than dealing with a historical source. If you think that the game is a source in itself, affected by the environment that produced it, and as long as you have like the categories and the methodologies to approach the game itself, you can do it. Really, the challenge came on the workshop part, because I had to come out, like, read about how to do oral history, how to carry out an interview, which type of questions do you actually want to use, how to keep track of the information. That was the part that was a little bit more newer to me. And the other part that was also unfamiliar that I had to read about to actually get acquainted to it is media studies and cultural studies. So How do, if you want to assess the impact of a form of media into somebody, how do you do that? Which type of theory do you use? That's why my research is divided into these two parts, because yes, I mean, one thing is what I can say about these games, but I am a historian who knows about the Crusades, who has read the sources, but most people who approach a game, they don't know this, and they're probably not going to look at the same thing that I'm looking at. In that sense, then you have to try to come up with a model in which you do not bias them too much to what you want them to answer you, but also not handhold them so that you end up just guiding their answers immediately. That was the challenging part. And it's something that I'm still working on. Like as I do the interviews, new questions pop in my head that maybe are better, that end up replacing previous questions that are not giving me the type of information that I'm looking for, not because they're not relevant, but it's because it's too vague, for example, and I need something more concrete. That has been really the most challenging part. Not that much the analysis of the games. It's really the interviews and the interaction with audiences what has proved to be more difficult, definitely.
Okay. I want to go a little bit to something else. Often a question, if we talk about the digital environment, for example, digital manuscripts, as also an historical source, of course, mm-hmm. is that it misses the sensory experience. Like you can smell it, you can mm-hmm. touch it. And also when I visit a museum to learn something about history, mm-hmm. there's also this sensory experience again. But in the game, this is a little bit lost. Do you see ways how in these historical games they try to re-enter it into the narrative, or?
Yes, and I think that's a very interesting point. Because, of course, if you think in the physicality of the object, that's obviously definitely lost, right? In the end, you're in a virtual space in which you're not actually physically walking around the stuff. But I do believe that video games do offer other advantages that maybe you would not get necessarily through the physical interaction. To give you an example, you mentioned a museum. If I go to a museum, I see the object, perceive it with my eyes. Depending on how it's produced, maybe I can smell it. Although I cannot think about it specifically, but you know what I mean. But they are decontextualized objects, right? If you think about an urn, the urn was not made to be put in a museum. The urn was made for something else. And when you have this type of virtual environments, you can end up recontextualizing many of these objects by actually putting them into the assumed space that the developer thinks this object might have been used for. Beyond that, and I think this is like maybe the real part that I think is very valuable about what video games do, is that video games, I think, is the closest thing outside of physical reenactment of trying to kind of have an embodied experience of the past. I read this very good text by, I'm terrible with names, with bibliography names, but his last name was Trodal, if I think. And he talked about video games as embodied experiences. And he made this argument, I'm not fully sure if I buy it, but I think it's an interesting idea, that if you're playing a video game, right, and for example, you jump in the video game, the process in your brain is the same as if you would jump physically, just that you're not jumping physically, right? Which I think is an interesting idea to consider. Like, what would it mean to have a virtual embodied experience of the past that you cannot have through the book, that you cannot have through the movie, because you're actually interacting with the whole thing? And beyond that, and I mean, this is something that is more difficult to put into words, but if anybody has played video games, maybe they will be able to understand me, is like this, also this emotional approach to the past. Like, if I think about my favorite video game and once I finish it, how I felt, like, I think that's a powerful rhetorical tool that, if properly harnessed, can very well be used to convey history in a meaningful way. So, of course, yes, the physicality of the object is lost, but the type of experience that the game can offer you is also very different, because we don't have enough money to reconstruct a 4th century Athens, right? But you can do it virtually. And then through that, you can play with different forms of experiences.
Yes, now I can recognize it. And also, when I play video games and I fall in something because I did not jump good enough, I actually sometimes feel in my stomach like the feeling, oh no, I feel like I really feel fall, sorry. So this is I think something, a lot of research still can be done on how this exactly works into an emotional and sensory regime.
That's one of the key elements that motivate my research. And it's also a political concern. And it's that we all know how the Middle Ages are very much weaponized for purposes of political radicalization. And the thing with, at least the way I understand political radicalization when we use history, is a pedagogical problem. It's about how we teach and how we are learning history in the end. Now, the thing is that I don't think it's a factual problem. If you come to somebody and you tell them who is already politically radicalized and you tell them, oh, you are wrong and I'm going to tell you why you are wrong, that very seldomly happens. I think it's more a rhetorical problem on how you actually approach this information to the individual. And that's where I think this type of medium can be very useful, because they are embodied and emotional forms of media. And if you can actually harness this type of feeling to convey a more meaningful message of the past, I think they can be very powerful rhetorical tools to combat political radicalization.
Yes. And this connects actually really nice to my last question, or more like or I want to give you an opportunity, because we did not say it today, but this is of course has a lot to do with public history, how we as an historian can contribute to society in a meaningful way. And actually, I wanted to give you an opportunity to make a kind of a plea for why this public history is so important and actually should be included in all history programs.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Think about how you interact with history once you leave high school, right? Most people do not interact with history through academic means. It's not the academic paper that you publish in a journal that you know is going to be read by your colleagues, but it normally ends in that information bubble, and that's what it is. Or unless you're like a really accomplished public scholar, you're not going to have the reach of Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed is going to reach more people than you, and that's simply unavoidable. And I think that just to dismiss this type of media because, oh, it's just a game, oh, it's just a movie, it's irresponsible for us as scholars, because we complain a lot of how audiences or the general public do not know enough history. And how not knowing enough history then leads to political problems, economic problems. But then the question is, what are we doing then to popularize what we do? Because if we just limit it to the book, to the paper, and to the class, well, we are just reaching very, very few amounts of people. Then what right do we have to complain, right? On the other hand, the thing is that, at least in my experience, when you do not do it necessarily through a very academic, rigor, like academically spaced way, people like history. People like to tell stories. People like to hear about the experiences of other people in the past that are relatable. And why not then use this type of media that is popular, that is fun? A lot of recent pedagogical literature is about active learning and the gamification of learning, because it's fun, it's an interesting way of learning. Why not use this type of tools? It's better than just, this doesn't mean that academic work is not important. Obviously, academic work is important. It's important to publish because you need feedback from your community and all this kind of stuff. But we cannot simply stay there, because if they stay there, then who is going to really take our ideas seriously?
Thank you. I think that it shows how important it is that you, as a young historian, already are brought in contact with options to do this, are educated about how to write for a broader public, and that this project and also this topic of is really going nicely into this.
Yeah, and I would add something extra to that. Because even when you look at tabletop games, many tabletop games are historically themed, right? So that's also what I would say to, for example, younger historians who are like beginning in their careers or are carrying their studies, like also try to think about how else can you convey the argument of your research that is not just an academic paper. Because again, writing academic papers is important, but that's like the only thing we do in classes. And we can become very good at writing academic papers, granted, but how many people are going to understand your argument just through the context of an academic paper? You can make also very powerful historical arguments using game rules and game mechanics. It's just a different way of conveying historical information. It's not more valid or less valid. Of course, it is molded by its medium and by what you want to do, but it's that. It's a rhetorical tool to convey information in the end.
Could you give a quick example of that? Because I think I understand it, but it seems still a little bit abstract, what you said.
To give you a basic example, Monopoly, right? When you play Monopoly, Monopoly is abstraction of how the capitalist system works. And what you go through Monopoly is you go around, you build, you get properties, you invest in the property, and there is a point in which you end up accumulating all the money because you have the most amount of properties. That is an argument. What is Monopoly saying about capitalism? If you want to get rich, it's not through work. It's through accumulation of property. That's an example. And you can do the same with history. I mean, let me think about a concrete example. I mean, Crusader Kings, because it's the one that we've been mentioning, right? When Crusader Kings asks you to engage with other nobles as a personal ruler and not as a nation state, it is giving you an argument of what the king thinks feudalism is about. Personal relations with your vassals, personal relations with other rulers, and personal relations with the church. Which, I mean, of course, it's more complex than that, but it's a very good abstraction because it's a form of decentralized power, right? That's what I mean by conveying arguments through what this other Bogost called procedural rhetoric. Taking rules and promoting behaviors and giving you an argument through that. If anything, a final example, think about the law in our societies. When society is telling you, you shall not kill because if you kill, you go to jail, it's giving you an argument, killing is bad.
That's a really clear argument indeed. We are now coming to the end of the podcast. First of all, I would like to thank Juan for his presence today to join us to talk about this fascinating topic of his PhD project. And I think everyone would join me with wishing you a good luck and a lot of success
by
finishing it.
No, thank you. And thank you to the crew of the Medieval Studies Radio for inviting me. And yeah, if anything, some final words. If you are a historian who likes video games, it is possible to do research about it. There is job venues for this. And it's a very interesting way of approaching the past.